I'm Cameron Crookston.
I'm Patrick Murray.
And this is
Video Queens, the podcast where two queens take a look back at the queer movies that made them.
And this week we watched Camp!
Camp episode.
Camp episode.
We obviously have to call this episode Notes on Camp.
No, that's very clever. Do you know why?
Yes. Bitch. I literally did put at the top of my Google Doc, notes on camp, haha. See what I did there. So we watched Camp, the movie musical. This movie meant so much to me when I watched it.
Me too.
That watching it back was joyful and confusing.
I watched this movie so many times when it came out that,
hey, right?
Even though I haven't seen it in at least 10 years, I remember, like, nothing was like, there was no moment where, like, oh, I forgot about that. I retained everything, and it's exactly how I remember.
Maybe we'll get into the plot so we can kind of...
Let's get that out of the way, because frankly, it's not even that important.
Right. I mean, really, it's just, like, a classic coming-of-age story of taking place at a musical theater camp in upstate New York.
In upstate New York.
Based on, of course, Stage Door Manor.
Oh, how did you research?
I did.
Yeah, there's like a main... So the main plot is a love triangle between basically the first straight male camper in history of this camp, apparently, Vlad. And he befriends a young drag queen named Michael and starts dating, like, plain Jane Ellen. And that's kind of our main plot, this love triangle. And then, like, there's a whole bunch of vignettes happening around.
You just fucking dragging Ellen?
Oh, I love Ellen.
But just being like, just for the purpose of the summary, plain Jane, wallpaper face, couldn't find her out of a lineup. Ellen.
That's how we're supposed to read her. And I actually think she's like, they work really hard to make her seem like, she's so plain. I was like, I guess she's not that plain. She's like quite pretty.
Well,
like,
it really seems like they did a good job for you. You're like, Erblin? What was that one?
I mean, I think we'll eventually get into the plot points and like other things that happen. But for me, the plot of this movie is like a buffet at a reception party where it's like, this is here if you want it. It's not really that important. You're here to delight for like the music and the escapist fantasy. The one of the
nail. The one of the nail. The want of a nail?
That's the song. Which I used to think was one in a mil when I first watched this movie because there was no YouTube.
But then you came to realize it's the want of a nail?
The want of a nail. That's what the song is called.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
The want of a nail.
For the want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For the want of a shoe, the horse was lost. What do you think they're singing?
I mean, okay, honestly, the way I remember lyrics is like, it's like someone who doesn't speak the language. Like, I only know the sounds. And when people will, like, I'm just like, oh, and I don't think twice about it. Like, I'll be like, oh, the wanna hey. The wanna ba hey.
I mean, I did used to think the RuPaul song To the Moon was Do the Room. And I thought maybe the room was a dance we were all doing. Like, ba, 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 do the room.
Do the room.
I wonder what a singing sounds like. So yeah, it's from The Want of a Nail. Anyway, we're jumping ahead because that's literally the finale.
Yeah, so we mainly follow, I guess our main characters are, plain Ellen.
Ellen, who's fine. Michael and Vlad. I think I would argue that, like, Michael is kind of the protagonist.
Yes.
In the opening sequence, Michael goes to his junior prom in full drag.
Yes.
And gets denied entrance and then gets beaten up.
Yeah.
It's very sad. Then everyone shows up to camp. His best friend is Ellen. And she is kind of coded as a quote-unquote fag hag.
Yeah.
Because this place is only populated by straight girls and gay guys. And she's...
I love that.
I know, this utopian universe.
And it's so funny, I started to get so mad about being like, why wasn't I sent there? And I was. Like, I went to a performing arts high school. Then I left to go to, like, acting university. Like, right. My life was entirely those spaces.
Yeah.
But I was still so mad that I was not sent to musical theater camp.
I went to musical theater day camp. So I had this experience, but in downtown Toronto.
Gay camp.
Showtime.
Oh my God. How old were you?
So I was there as a camp counselor. So okay. 12 to 19.
You immediately were a counselor.
I my first year I was a CIT because I discovered it a little too late. It was still like the most fun. Best job I've ever had. Okay. We're going to get the plot and then we're going to talk about our personal journeys. Okay, so they come to camp. Michael has just kind of been beaten up. He's no longer living at home. But they're all at camp, so it's going to be fine. And then Vlad arrives, and, like, everyone is shook because Vlad is straight.
Yes.
And every time he walks in a room, people stop talking and stare.
Yes.
When he...
the gay gaze.
The gay gaze. Their beady little eyes. When they have to... they do, like, open calls on the first week, where they all do auditions. And Vlad does a guitar-accompanied Wild Horses cover by the Rolling Stones. And the main counselor leans over and says, oh my God, an honest to God straight boy. They can't handle it. Vlad hooks up with, first hooks up with like the token pretty girl, who is Jill. Jill has a subplot where she's this like diva whose roommate is Anna Kendrick. Anna Kendrick is this like beta female who just wants to be her house servant and is like
full cuck energy.
Oh, just like, can I do that for you, madam? There's a scene.
They have this whole like dom sub relationship that is like, I feel like Anna Kendrick sleeps in a cage under the bed.
Yes.
Like
when Vlad comes to hook up with Jill, Vlad walks in and Fritzy is just doing chores. Like, Jill is sitting at her own mirror and just says, leave us. And she scuttles away, presumably to the cage.
But also that the way that, I think she says, can Fritzy get you anything?
Can Fritzy get
and
you
he looks to Fritzy and she gives him a look of like, I've killed people before and I will kill again. And he's just like, no, I'm good.
Yeah,
so yeah. Vlad kind of spends the movie hooking up with different people. Mm-hmm. And I would say in general, like, the protagonist we wanted was Michael.
Mm-hmm.
The one we kind of get is Vlad.
We get a lot of energy.
We get too much Vlad.
We get
for me.
Too much Vlad. It's bad.
And that was a weird thing rewatching this movie because like when I watched it, I was in love with Vlad.
Oh, me too.
Like
we hated ourselves apparently
yeah,
at this age.
That's the thing. And like I could have fooled me. I thought Wild Horses was an original song. When I first saw this movie, you could not tell me that that was a Rolling Stones song. Like, I was like, this song that this movie has found, like, this obscure indie, like, has been performed by Vlad and invented music. And I was like, I was done.
So I know this song. So I talk a big game, but I actually know this song is... There is a cover of this that Buffy and Angel dance to when Angel shows up to Buffy's prom.
Oh.
Right. Okay, so yeah. So we spend a lot of time on Vlad, and Vlad has this kind of like last man on earth thing because he's the only straight guy in the camp.
Yes.
He does eventually end up dating Ellen. Because Ellen kind of, for someone with very low self-esteem, we're led to believe.
She shoots high.
She goes for it. The first time, they're running lines together, and it's night, and they're looking up, and she's like, ooh, first star of the night. I know what my wish is. Like, with the full confidence of a middle-aged drag queen. Like,
yes. Yeah. It was, make no mistake, like, I want that dick.
She's in for the kill.
She is in for the kill. Yeah, okay, so, like, they are all existing in this, like, so in this camp, they do shows every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great for us as the viewer because we get a lot of musical numbers.
We do.
And the musical, like the performances are outstanding.
The performances are fantastic and they pick, as a lifelong theater nerd, it's a really good songbook. Like, it's not Cats and Les Mis. Like they are like, it's Burt Bacharach, it's Stephen Sondheim.
Yes.
There's a running joke about Stephen Sondheim being, like, the father of musical theater.
Yes.
He shows up to the benefit concerts.
Yeah.
As Vlad and Ellen are, quote-unquote, dating,
Yes.
I don't know why I put it in quotes. They're dating. They're a couple, more or less.
They're camp dating.
They're camp dating. Yeah, they're totally camp dating.
Yeah.
Michael is clearly in love with Vlad, and they're becoming friends, although Michael, like, never stops making puppy dog eyes at Vlad.
And Vlad never stops telling him to not be gay.
No,
like, so like, much of their friendship is him being like, are you sure? What if you tried not expressing yourself?
He does say, have you ever experimented with heterosexuality? To which Michael says, sleep with a straight guy? What's the point? That's a good line. yeah, he does. At one point, Michael hooks up with a girl named Dee. We'll get into Dee.
I heard it. He got into
Dee. He got into Dee. And basically says, like, I did it so you'd be less threatened by me.
Yeah,
which is like, oh, honey, I get hooking up with the wrong people for the wrong reasons. There's also like a subplot where Michael hasn't spoken to his parents in a while, and Vlad is really pushing for that relationship to be mended, even though he has no context for this and is not qualified to give this advice. And there's this weird scene on the dock at the end where Michael and Vlad go skinny dipping, and Vlad kind of starts to hit on Michael and says, maybe I'm confused. And then Vlad just kind of reveals that his whole thing is he wants people to like him, so he has sex with them. And that's why he hit on Ellen and dated her. He just, like, wanted to make her feel good and wanted her to like him. And then they all go skinny dipping together, and it's a weird resolution for me.
Yes. 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 I think this was also a lesson for me in the nature of memory.
Oh.
So I remember very clearly being like, however old I was, I don't know if I was like 16 or 15 or 16, I don't know, whatever it was. And I was in love with Vlad. I thought we saw his butt, first of all. I made that up.
Okay.
I thought that he and Michael get together.
Oh, that, I mean, for what this movie is, that would have been a happier ending.
And, yeah, cause I remember so clearly his, like, his dripping wet body, which I had saved as stills on my computer, and him and Michael and the skinny dipping and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When I watched this again, I had just an entirely different take on Vlad this time around.
Mm-hmm.
I, in general, wanted way less of him in the whole movie. And also, I was like, oh, Vlad's, like, so we also have just a full sociopath at this camp.
I wrote down a few times, is Vlad a sociopath?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the, and where this time I found his scene with Michael where he's standing naked being like, I don't know, maybe I'm confused. Isn't that what you want?
Yeah.
Like, like unsettling and terrifying. And I was like, is he going to drown, Michael? Like, is he like, what the fuck is going on here? This is so bizarre. So I did not find it, I guess, like, in my youth, there was something so exciting about, like, maybe the straight guy will do it, and maybe he won't, and whatever. He's just, like, I was so obsessed with him that, like, I loved everyone that got to hook up with him.
Yeah, I think because I, too, thought, like, the path to happiness is when you fixate on someone who doesn't know you're alive, and then at the end, they love you back.
Yes.
It never occurred to me to wish for something reciprocal.
Yeah.
I remember being frustrated as a 20-year-old, I'm going to say, when Vlad says, I'm just confused, and Michael says, you're not confused, you like girls. I was like, shut up! He would have kissed you there!
I know!
He would have made this happen!
I know! I know!
But no, Michael did the right thing.
There's so much time spent on him that I'm like, this movie ends up touching on a lot of, like, really interesting topics, stories, and, like, especially queer ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we found ourselves back to, like, but how is the straight guy doing at camp? I was like, I don't care. You know, and Bert Hanley was the alcoholic director who, like, comes to the camp and is, like, comes to the camp to hate all of the kids, which is funny because, like, I don't know. Yeah. I did like some of it because there was a lot of humor in this movie. I did find the movie very funny.
Inconsistent, but occasionally so funny.
Oh my God. First of all, just the, like, I wanted so much more of the, like, 8-year-old gay who is sitting next to the sports counselor on the bus, and he's like, I'm the sports counselor, and he just goes, we have a sports counselor.
It's my favorite running joke. He's only in two scenes.
It's so lovely.
Bert Hanley is an interesting, like, super underdeveloped, but it's like, yeah, so he is this, he's this one-hit wonder musical theater writer who is, like, a fall-down drunk alcoholic. The vibe we kind of get is, like, he can't get work anymore. The only work he can get is, like, a guest director at a musical theater day camp.
Yeah.
This is the worst
job. It's overnight camp, but yeah.
Oh, right, sorry.
You went to day camp.
I was projecting my own narrative on it.
The only job he can get is working with Cameron, the star student
at Showtime
and leading lady.
Yeah, so he can get a job at a summer camp. It's his hell. He's there. He doesn't want to talk about his success. Anytime anyone approaches him about his one show, he's very bitter. The kind of climax for him is that, like, Vlad, for no particular reason, is just playing one of his songs on, like, the porch one day.
Yeah.
And Bert gets very triggered and decides he's just gonna read all of these children to Phil.
To Phil. But also, I will say that everything he said was true.
I mean,
he was like, Times Square is a theme park.
Yeah.
T.
Yeah.
Teenage faghags become adult faghags. Yep. You know, mothers be good to your daughters.
Yeah.
Girls become lovers. Straight guys are straight, and you can't turn them because you're alone.
I mean, that's him being a good drag mother.
And so the thing is that, like, the things are hurtful,
yeah,
but they are true. I think he's like, you're gonna, like, you're just gonna be bitter and working a restaurant job. And I felt that. The thing is that I don't think that's bad. That's the thing. It's like, Times Square is a theme park, yes. And it's also, like, a joyful theme park where, like, sure, there are, like, high kicks and it's fucking Shrek the Musical. But, like, yay.
Yeah, it was an interesting point. I had a moment.
We love adult fake hags.
We do. And I think we just call them women now.
That's,
yeah. You can have straight, you can have gay friends, ladies. It's okay.
Yeah.
So don't stigmatize being open-minded. Yeah, like, this thing of, like, the foundation being laid here is going to lead to a lot of bitterness and waitressing jobs. I had a moment of, like, having a really positive experience that makes you feel really good about a skill you have in your youth is not a bad thing.
And that's the thing. And that's the realization that Bert has when he says something so lovely that I also wrote down, which is, the more normal we try to make them, the more lonely and isolated they're going to feel.
Oh! Yeah.
Because that's the thing. It's like, it's not our job to give someone a reality check. Reality gives you that check. Mm. So nurture people and, like, let, like, again, like, you get to see these kids. First of all, like, I thought this was so lovely that, like, Michael, I just got chills. Like, Michael's escape from getting beaten in drag at his prom is he thinks of camp.
Yeah.
And, like, and then he says that later where he's like, no, I wasn't there anymore. I was here.
Yeah.
Like, that this is that, like, safe space where they can, like, again, it's like, the gays run the roost here. There's no fucking sports counselor. Fuck off.
You're the outcast.
Fuck off, Kyle.
Yeah.
Like, this is just, like, where they all get to be so embarrassing. And I remember, obviously remember that time in my life. I didn't need anyone to be like, you're embarrassing.
I knew. Because, yeah, you're right. Like, I was in the real world a lot.
And yeah, so let me go and like, be around other embarrassing people. And feel alive and feel safe and, like, get to nerd out. Like, people nerd out on different things. And unfortunately, we, like, worship people that, like, nerd out on sports.
Yeah.
Or, like, the things that we've decided there are, like, the gender norm.
Yeah.
That, like, oh, good, be obsessed with that. But if you're obsessed with something different, like, musical theater or...
Like, how fucking nerdy is fantasy football? That is so lame.
Yeah.
But it's totally acceptable because it's in a culture of, like, this is the normal thing you're supposed to like.
Yes.
Where,
like, the way they talk about Stephen Sondheim and what, like, can I just say? And it's like, and this is a movie made for people who like musical theater.
Yeah.
So there are so many, like, again, it's kind of that Another Gay Movie thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there are a lot of, like, inside jokes.
This was so written from the inside.
Like, yes.
Every nod to a musical theater moment was so authentic. And it, yeah, it wasn't like, this is not what outside normies think musical theater is. I love that it wasn't Andrew Lloyd Webber, it was Stephen Sondheim.
Yes.
There are so many great jokes.
All of those references flying around because they all speak the same language.
Yeah.
And so if you speak that language, you will enjoy the movie.
I mean, yeah, I think this is definitely like, this movie is a love letter to theater nerds.
Yeah.
Is what this movie is. I remember watching this movie when it came out and just like, I watched it just a billion times and I would show it to people and so few people got it.
Right, this was your litmus test.
Yeah, like, the people that, like, I watched this with my, so it was my first, like, I was in my first apartment ever.
Oh my god.
So it was very, like, a baby gay in the big city.
Yeah. I think, again, I saw this because I'm younger than you, at a younger age.
So younger again.
I feel like I watched this, like, as I was, again, like, discovering musical theater. So in some ways, like... like, I didn't even know... There were references I got, and there were references I didn't. And then, again, like, not another gay movie, and then looked up.
Yeah.
Like, I would be like, I didn't know Company. So when she... like, I just knew Ladies Who Lunch as the Anna Kendrick song when she poisons her fucking... when she poisons her dom.
So that's maybe my favorite scene in the movie. I feel like I'm going to say that a few times this episode, but...
yes. Okay. Yeah, this is my favorite song. Okay, wait, no. This is... I kept on writing in my notes, this scene changed my life.
Yeah.
And so many times that I'm like, how many times did my life change in the course of this movie?
So once Anna Kendrick and her dom have a falling out, because the dom is gets to the point where it's just too creepy that she's being this submissive and this, like, she's cleaning her underwear, I'm missing, and she's like, that crosses a line, I'm done. And what Anna Kendrick realizes is that she actually just wants to be her. So, her dom...
in order to be her, she must kill her.
I mean, Oedipus would agree.
The logic tracks.
The dom has the lead in the company, and so Anna Kendrick poisons her, and then when Jill is singing The Ladies Who Lunch, it's so funny. She's singing The Ladies Who Lunch in a black wig, and she sings one line.
The full line of, like... what is it? Just here's
she sings. Here's to the ladies who lunch something. Everybody something words,
and then pause, turns around, blows chunks,
vomits audibly. The music stops. Then she turns back around. She sings the next line.
Look into their eyes, and you'll see what she knows. Everybody
turns around, vomits. That, she does it maybe three times. It's so funny.
It is. That's the thing when this movie is hitting. It's like, it's comedic voice.
Yeah.
Because again, you're like, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, it's not, it's this person, like being sick on stage is the person desperately being like they're going to still perform.
Yeah.
And then they're like, I'm going to barf soon.
Yeah.
And then they're going to turn around, just throw up and be like, let's keep going.
Jill is prepared to do the whole play like this.
line by line.
She's like, listen, I can get through this. I just need to vomit every 5 seconds. But as long as we're okay with that...
I can get out each line as a whole, and then I'm just gonna barf. But then I'll turn back around. My voice still sounds great. And we'll just keep going.
Yeah. So anyway, one verse in, Anna Kendrick decides she's gonna take the role. She's fully dressed. And she literally, like, grabs Jill by the waist.
Just throws her off stage.
And then she does the number. She's so good. There's a moment where, like, in, like, a break between lines, she just screams and crushes a martini glass with her bare hands.
Oh. The way that at the end of the song, it's like, everybody rise, but she's looking into the audience being like, stand the fuck up for me.
They're so scared of her, they all stand up.
But they all stand up and give her an ovation because they've been told to.
Oh my god. Yeah. It's pretty fantastic. Yeah, that's definitely my favorite scene, maybe.
It's so iconic.
Yeah. I also have the experience of, like, so to me, I'm Still Here is from camp. Which is so funny that, like, there's something so theater school about a 13-year-old girl with braces singing I'm Still Here.
I know. Like, hasn't hit puberty.
Yep.
And is being like, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Like, I've, like, good times and bum times.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, the depression was
last year.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, was that grade six?
Yeah.
Like,
just got my period. I mean, so many people my age know that is the song that Shirley MacLaine sings in Postcards from the Edge.
Right.
Have you seen
that? Yes.
It twirled. So the last three musical numbers are when they discover Bert Hanley's songbook.
Yeah.
Of those, there are three songs we get. Century Plant.
Yeah.
Here's Who I Am. And then the finale number, Want of a Nail. That's what it's called. Okay, the thing that blew my mind is that the Century Plant and Want of a Nail are not are existing songs. They took existing songs that other people wrote and they accredit them to Bert Hanley. But what is originally written, I think, for this show, again, it was hard to research, but I'm pretty sure it is Here's Who I Am, is that what it's called?
It's the Braces song.
The Braces song. Okay, so there is a one-woman subplot in this in which Jenna is a girl who comes... She comes to the camp in the scene where everyone's kind of getting on the bus to go to camp. Her sassy gay friend comes up and says, "Oh my God, I love you, girl, work! I thought you weren't coming back this year." And her parents say, "We wanted to send her to fat camp," their words, "but she really wanted to come back to Camp Ovation. So as a compromise, we've wired her jaw shut." And the running gag is that this poor girl...
She can't really talk.
So,
and you know what? That gag had legs for me. That any time when she was in fucking Romeo and Juliet being like...
She does a monologue with her jaw wired shut. It's so funny.
It did it for me. Comedic gold.
Because they didn't overuse it. She's only in about three scenes.
Yeah.
There's one scene where she's drinking what is revealed to be a chicken breast that looks like a milkshake. It's so gross. During the final show they're doing, so Anna Kendrick and her dom... Anna Kendrick poisons the dom's makeup. She breaks out. They get in a fight. So neither of them can do the big final number. And the big final number is this, like, soulful gospel number. So thank God they can't do it.
Yeah.
And they decide... The director decides that, Jenna, you have to do it. So we're going to cut off your braces. We shouldn't be doing this with, like, stage tools.
I remember, like, that is very... It's so upsetting when he has just those, like wire cutters.
Yeah.
And he's like, "It's time." And you're like... Because also then it's like... It's not like they break some of the wires to then, like, free up her mouth. She suddenly has zero braces anymore. Like, they've done a full... full oral surgery without anesthetic. And it's like...
And no training.
And no training. Yeah. So that's upsetting. But who cares? It gets us to her doing this number delivered to her parents of, like, "This is me.
This,
like,
is who I..." I mean, it's a very on-the-nose song about, like, "This is who I am."
On the teeth.
On the teeth. Burning out that. and it's just like, she has, like, a killer voice. She blows it away. And you're right, like, she gives it... Because there is a scene, they show up to the benefit, and the dad is a dick. The dad's like, "How do you still look like that with your jaw wired shut?" Oh. And the mom doesn't really say anything, but she kind of gives him mean eyes.
Yeah.
But then when she is doing this performance to them, the audience, they are giving you face acting for the century. Like...
"We may not have a line, but we will show you that we have changed because of this song."
You see the dad is, "What?"
Yeah.
And the mom is like, oh, shit. And then the dad is giving you, "Wait, I should rethink my choices."
And the mom's like, "You should. Like, I'm going to speak up for my daughter." And then he's like, "You know what? She's perfect just the way she is."
Like, it's truly like they are eyebrow acting for the back of the house.
Yes. Yes.
And it is such a fantastic number.
I wrote down in all caps that the Turkey Lurkey number changed my life.
Okay, great.
I just remember seeing this and I was like, as I was watching it, I'm like, I loved this number so much. I did not know this song at all.
Yeah.
Where the fuck it came from, where they're singing about a turkey. But it was so, again, I know, like, drinking game, joyful.
Yeah.
It was so joyful. It's just a killer number with great dancing and the pretty girl's the lead, which I always love.
Yeah.
And, like, and I just love that number.
Yeah. It's a really, it's a great number. And then the last few minutes of it, they do a mashup to "I'm Still Here," which always gives me chills.
Yes.
Because jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells,
I'm still here. I was going to do the mashup part, but I knew.
So we didn't rehearse.
I knew as you were doing the jingle bells,
that I was gonna.
That you were gonna also take the "I'm Still Here" part, because if I've ever started the, if you ever start the part, the background part, you're like, "Oh, I'm not gonna live here.
Yeah. I invented this."
My friend Connie used to tell me that when she was driving in the car with her gay friend in high school, they used to have to play For Good from Wicked twice so they could both sing the other part. Because it was like, but I want that. Like, you did the harmony this time? Or, like, I did the harmony, so now I'm going to do, like, the full part.
What's the good part? Is the good part Glinda or Alphaba?
I think specifically the moment where they're like a time I found a orbit.
What do you think those words are? Like, okay. A tiny bit of forbit is what I heard.
Okay, it's kind of like a tonic full of orbit as it passes the sun.
As a comet pulled from orbit.
Yeah.
We should do a new segment where anytime there is a song, I want to hear what you think the lyrics are.
But it's just sounds. Like, it's not that I really confidently think, like, I just don't even register words. But when I hear someone, again, like, once you're, like, comet pulled from orbit, definitely it's more around the comet full of orbit for me.
Right.
But yeah, okay, pulled from orbit.
Pulled, it's fine. I mean, I kind of like your version better. I think comma pull of orbit.
Like a comma pull of orbit. Why don't we pop up to the problematic?
Do you want to pop up to the problematic and see if there are any camp boxes?
I know what my box is, and my box is named Vlad.
Okay, great. I have a couple of boxes to do with the race politics of this movie.
Yes.
I didn't have a lot of boxes. I generally think this movie has aged relatively well. But yeah, there's some issues.
Yeah.
Why don't you go first?
Okay, so the Vlad for me was...
I like that you're using Vlad's name to mean problem. Like, I have a Vlad with this.
And I'm a little bit Vlad about it. I think it's also because I've, like, participated in this, too. Mm-hmm. Where, like, if you're in a... it's, like, the deification of, like, the enlightened straight man. Mm. I don't know if that makes... Like, being in a... When you're in theater school or whatever, it's, like... You're so short on straight guys, mm-hmm. and we're so obsessed with them.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, you can play the lead. It's like, they're like, they care the least, they show up late, and then they get the lead. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I'm still here. Like, that part, it's just like a frustration with musical theater in general, because mm-hmm. it's like, all of us here are queer and losers. So, like, why don't we... Either, like, if there are no roles for queer losers, since that's entirely us, then we should either make them mm-hmm. or, like, modify them.
Right.
Or do, like, again, like, this idea that you have to be masculine, mm-hmm. like, that obsession where, again, like, Vlad plays a fucking guitar, mm-hmm. And that song he wrote that apparently is Mick Jagger's, where they're like, oh my god, a straight guy, an honest to god straight guy, and they're so, like, relieved.
Yeah.
And you're like, he's not paying your bills.
Yeah.
Like, this camp is built on the subscription payments from the queer kids who come back every year and don't want to meet the sports counselor.
Yeah.
So, like, for Michael's birthday, everyone is in drag, which is so nice, but Vlad just doesn't.
Yeah.
And I was annoyed.
I was super annoyed.
I just wrote down, I feel like Vlad is in the way of the movie I want to watch. And yeah, just in general, it's like, I just found him, there was just, like, too much time spent on him. Again, I'm just like, you're not the lead of this movie to me.
Yeah.
And I'm not interested in, like, you realizing that gay is a thing.
Right.
And I feel like this was, like, the movie was all about queer people and they were like, we need something.
I mean, so that's...
Like, again, he got the lead.
Yeah.
He got the lead in the play. The,
that's very meta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that upsets me. It's triggering.
It's triggering for you. No, I think there's, like, two things about that I agree with. And one is this idea that the audience was going to need a straight character to relate to. And this is a criticism of a lot of, like, even, like, more recent... serious dramas about queer people. So, like, one of the many criticisms of the Danish Girl is that the main character or the kind of the audience surrogate is not actually Lily, but Lily's faithful wife. And that we need to make this the story of the straight person in the world of queers, because yes. The audience will just be so unable to connect to queer characters, so we always have to see it through a straight lens.
Yes.
Which is infuriating. It also, yeah, I think I said this earlier, it felt very frustrating that in this queer utopia of a world, mm-hmm. the main love story is a love triangle between a straight girl, a straight boy, and a pining gay guy.
Yes.
And, like, as a young gay, that felt very relatable, because I don't think I had... I didn't know that I should want for more. I just kind of wanted this cliche with a happy ending.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, it was so frustrating, one, that we got this much screen time around a straight guy, and that there was no representation of queer relationships or queer sex, despite the fact that this apparently is a universe in which there's only one straight guy.
Yes. Which... I mean, again, kind of tracks, unfortunately. Like, you're like, yeah, we did do that. Like, again, like, I still remember those guys from theater school. Mm-hmm. And I remember when they were challenged to play gay.
Yeah.
And I remember when we loved it. We were like, the bravery.
They're so,
like,
brave for pretending to be us.
And I did that. Yeah. Like, I was part of that problem. And, like, and that they did get, like, they got laid. Yeah. Like, they did.
Yeah. I mean, I'm inventing and projecting. I feel like the way that this script was written is like, I want to just tell the story of this camp, and the best way to do that is just a series of vignettes, but I need to like a spine to hang this on, so mm-hmm. we're gonna create this really generic love story that's gonna connect all the more interesting vignettes, and I want to take the director by the queer little hand and say, like, bitch, we don't need that. No. Or just have the bravery to make this more authentic. Because, like, yeah, like, all the moments in between Fritzy, the wire jaw, vomiting on stage, like, all of those little aside moments feel so much realer.
Yeah.
All the funny moments are in those scenes.
Yes.
Everything with Vlad and Ellen feels very flat and two-dimensional. It's not very interesting. It doesn't build.
No.
Yeah. So it did kind of feel like they thought that this is what the movie needed to sell us on it as a cohesive thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe in the remake, it's Fritzy's story. What am I saying? Maybe. In the remake, it's Fritzy's story.
I mean, in the remake, it's Michael's story. So, what are some of your boxes?
So, I have two boxes that are connected. It's like box one of two, box two of two.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll start with, the concept of colorblind casting.
Yeah.
So there is a scene in which, I believe the character's name is Sean. He's a minor character because there's a lot of awesome minor characters in this. Yeah. So Sean, is, a young queer black man, and he's a little brother who never talks, named Petey, who's a prodigy tap dancer.
Yeah.
Roll with it. They're dressed, they're doing Fiddler on the Roof. We never see a rehearsal Fiddler, but they come in dressed as, like, Orthodox Jews from Fiddler. And you know, he has a what-the-fuck moment with the camp director to say, it's like, why do we always have to play white characters?
Yeah.
And he lists off, he's like, Porgy and Bess, Bring in Denoise. Like, he lists all of these musicals that have black characters in them, to which the camp director says, it's colorblind casting, and I don't have enough black kids to do an all-black show. And the implicit logic there is, of course, black characters can play white characters, but the opposite is not true. I don't have enough black kids to do an all-black show, so I'm not going to do any black characters.
Yes.
In response to this question, they decide to do Dreamgirls. And then they give the lead to Ellen, and we see Dee standing off stage with her arms crossed, playing, you know, like, obviously another character, but, like, in this... the context of the movie, she gets no lines in Dreamgirls. So this is, like, kind of the issue with colorblind casting, and this is, like, a larger issue with the notion of, like, a lot of, I think, quote-unquote, like, liberal people who maybe don't have a ton of context for this form of racism is the thing with people say, it's like, I don't see color, I'm colorblind.
Yeah.
The idea that we live in a world in which race really does not matter is fine as a utopian goal, but to say I'm going to move through the world like that right now also means that you're going to ignore racism. Yes. And you're going to ignore that people of color, people who are racialized, have a different experience, and to ignore that is not helpful.
It also seems to be, like, an exclusively white take on things. Of, like,
yeah.
Of, like, oh, I don't see, like, because that doesn't affect you.
I don't see color.
How nice that you get to say, like, no. It, like, everyone's just, sure.
Yeah.
But, like, but that doesn't mean that it's not there. It doesn't mean that's not a struggle that people have to deal with.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of white kids, I mean, like, maybe not. Like, some white kids, and I definitely got the lesson from my parents, that, like, race doesn't matter. Whereas a lot of kids of color get the lesson of, like, so racism is a thing you're going to face in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are really different experiences. So, yeah, like, it's I think it's problematic that Ellen gets the lead in the first, quote-unquote, black show that they do, whereas you have these, like, powerhouse black vocalists who are kind of singing extras in this movie.
Yes.
And so my other...
That's
the second box two of two, is the character of Dee. So the first scene, the first shot of this movie is Dee. It's just like a glamour shot of Dee dressed in like bright orange. And she does this amazing solo in Gospel at Kalanis.
Yeah.
She does the opening number and she blows us away.
If you're going to say what I think you're going to say, I'm going to die.
What am I going to say?
I don't know.
Okay. And Dee is around. She sings a lot in this show.
Okay, it sounds like you're not going to say what I'm going to say.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to just talk words.
Yeah. Okay, for me, it was that Dee does that opening song, mm-hmm. that whole opening scene, and then the first named person is Vlad. So Dee does that whole song, has that whole moment.
Yeah.
And then Vlad pops up to do a Boogie Nights monologue in his mirror, and it's like, this is Vlad.
Yeah.
Like, Dee is just, like... Oh, she's singing, and it's outstanding.
Yeah.
But here's a character. Like, I'm like, why don't I know her name?
Yeah. Dee technically has one line during Michael's birthday party montage where they're all dressed in drag, and he's dressed as a drag king, and she sits on his lap, and under music kind of says, yes, drag kings are us. The first time she gets real dialogue that is more than one line is an hour and 20 minutes into a 2-hour movie, even though she is the first face we see in this film. The only scene in which she has two scenes of dialogue, and one of them is after she has slept with Michael, Vlad comes in to confirm that that's what's happened. And she basically becomes a plot device.
Yep.
So that there is someone for, she hooks up with Vlad briefly, and then she and Ellen get in a fight, because she and Ellen are friends we see in the background of a lot of scenes. So even though Dee is kind of used for her voice, and, like, arguably has one of the best voices in this, in a movie in which everyone is kind of an amazing singer.
Like, the chills, like, first of all.
Yeah.
Sasha Allen, like, I saw her in Hair. Like, she is, like, in the revival of Hair, if you listen to fucking Aquarius, that's her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, the chills. Her fucking voice.
She toured with the Rolling Stones a few years ago, and she did the accompaniment in Give Me Shelter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, Ellen is a great singer, Jenna is a fantastic singer, but, like, arguably Dee is the strongest singer.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just to have, there are, and, like, I think Dee is the most prominent example of this, but there's a couple of black actors who are in this who just have these, like, powerful vocals, but the don't get a plot.
Yeah.
I mean, Dee can
barely get a name. Yeah.
Sean is kind of hanging around the background. And other than that scene in which he kind of makes a case for them to do a show that features actors of color, we don't get a lot of his personality.
Truly, I didn't know if it was Dee or, like, whomever in the Dreamgirl scene, because they were so out of focus.
And I mean, I think yes, you can do, like, quote-unquote cross-racial casting. And if they're doing Dreamgirls, it's not that they couldn't have any white kids playing any of the roles, but there's this thing of, like, you have these young black women who always have to play white characters, even though they're great singers, and you finally have this, like, really substantial role about the experience of a woman of color. Let a black girl play that role.
Yes.
She is sick of being in Oklahoma.
Or just sick of being the fucking, the three doo-wop girls in Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah. While the white girl plays, fuck.
Audrey.
I all I can think is Ellen, because I'm thinking of Ellen.
Ellen Green.
Ellen Green. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, that's my problem, problematic box, is that, like, despite the fact that this movie does showcase a lot of Black vocal talent, when it comes to the plot and characters who get actual narrative, it's overwhelmingly white. We should mention, though, that Michael is played by a Latin actor.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's not completely whitewashed, but, like, again, in the revival, why doesn't Dee get a plot line other than to be a prop in the Vlad show?
Yes.
It's a Vlad idea.
Patrick, as you alluded to earlier, this is based on a real musical theater summer camp called Stage Door Manor.
Yeah.
Some famous alumni that you might be aware of are Bryce Dallas Howard, Beanie Feldstein,
Jennifer Jason Leigh,
Lea Michele,
Mandy Moore,
Natalie Portman,
Marissa Tomei,
Robert Downey Jr.,
Zach Braff.
Famous people. Gone here.
And I went to theater school with people who went to Stage Door Manor.
Really?
Yep. And it was like, that's so funny, that list. Because, yeah, I feel like everyone in theater school, because I went to theater school in New York, mm-hmm. everyone had a horror story about Lea Michele. And a great experience with Jennifer Jason Leigh. No, I'm kidding.
It's just she's this tall.
It's just the Lea Michele thing, but right?
Yeah. So you didn't go to camp as a kid, or you went to like a regular camp?
I didn't go to sleepaway camp. Okay. I went to sleepaway camp once for a week, and I told my mom it was okay, but I'd like to go to the shorter one, and she. I did a lot of day camps.
Right.
So I did do like kids on camera camp or whatever. Doesn't sound great. Okay. I think it was called Camera Kids.
It's no Showtime.
Which was like, and like we made like little movies, yeah. like little funny movies. So I did do that one. I did like circus camp.
Oh, you little nerd.
Yeah. But I also remember going to, in the summer I went to Les Mis camp.
I've seen a minute. Okay, here's what I'm picturing.
Okay. They send us to
prison. No. You get there.
And
you
shave my head.
No, you assume, hey, I'm here because we're going to put on Les Mis. And then the counselors are like, no, this is just a Les Mis themed camp. Here's your gruel. First of all,
step one is build a barricade.
It's like build a barricade. And then you go to like, you know, like in the afternoon you learn about the French Revolution.
Yeah.
You pull out your teeth. You make crafts out of your like teeth and
you
hair.
Shave your hair to send money to your daughter. Yes.
And don't forget to bring your permission form next week because we're all getting consumption.
So yeah, it was a camp exclusively built around the fact that we were gonna put on Les Mis. And it was kind of my, it was, that would be my, that, I guess I did go
yeah.
to camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did go to camp. Okay. Yeah. So final thoughts.
I think you should watch camp. If you can hear the sound of my voice, watch camp.
Yeah.
If you go in knowing that this is just fan service for musical theater kids with a yes. lot of really good in jokes and some like legitimately fantastic performances. So the song that always makes you laugh, For Want of a Nail. It's the final curtain call number where everyone comes out.
Yeah.
It's so fun. Michael comes out in full drag.
Yes.
And the fact that he gets to do the finale number of the show, of the benefit, in full drag, as like glitter is falling and people are lifting him from their shoulders. It's yeah. a nice triumph moment. I think the thing is like, is this movie a quote unquote good movie? Maybe yes. technically not. It's right. very joyful.
Yes.
It's queer joy.
Yes. I think all of the, like, all of the actors they got are great.
Yeah.
Like, they're really fun. The side characters, like, the bits are solid. Like, they're just some really, yeah. really good, like, supporting performances.
And as with pretty much everything we watch, it's on YouTube.
I can't. It's so wild.
I dread the day we do a movie that's not available on YouTube. But maybe that'll never happen, because maybe all indie gay movies are just on YouTube.
Which kind of bums me out, because then I'm like, I started to be like, oh, are we a part of the problem? Like, I'm like, I like the idea that these these like actors who got a part in a gay movie might get a residual check from, like, obviously not just from us, but from people watching it, but all of their shit's just on YouTube. Because no studio is like, oh, we need to make sure that's not there.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I usually look for these on the many streaming platforms I signed up for at the beginning of quarantine. I was hoping Camp would be on OTV.
I know.
It wasn't.
I know.
Yeah. They gotta make room for all the drag races. Anyway, that's this week. Go watch Camp.
And remember, you can email us movie suggestions at videoqueenspod@gmail.com or tweet us at videoqueenspod on Twitter.
If you're looking for a way to support the show, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That really helps people to find us. Or just tell your friends. Word of mouth is super helpful.
And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Bye.
Bye.